The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Come on, time for our favorite show.
Welcome to Dogs Rock Radio with Pamela Hill. In our show, we'll talk about your best friend, from the dogs that are specially trained to help others to training and care for the dogs that are important members of our family. Now, here is your host, Pamela Hill.
Hello and welcome to the show, everyone. This is Dogs Rock Radio and this is your host, Pam Hill. Well, have you ever wondered how a human's behavior affects the dogs living in their homes? Well, the Center for Canine Behavior Studies is working tirelessly to answer that very question. Today, we're honored to have the world-renowned veterinarian and animal behaviorist, Dr. Nicholas Dodman, explain the innovative and fascinating new study he and his colleagues are undertaking to explain the unique bond we share with our four-legged friends. By way of introduction, Dr. Nicholas Dodman is a diplomat of the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists and Program Director for the Tufts Animal Behavior Department of Clinical Sciences. He is, without a doubt, the world's most renowned and celebrated veterinary behaviorist. In 1981, Dr. Dodman emigrated from Scotland to the U.S., where he became a faculty member of Tufts University School of Veterinary Medicine. After spending several years in the field of animal behavior, he founded the Animal Behavior Clinic at Tufts in 1986. Dr. Dodman has written many best-selling books, including The Dog Who Loved Too Much, Dogs Behaving Badly, If Only They Could Speak, The Well-Adjusted Dog, and the one I just finished, Good Old Dog. Dr. Dodman regularly appears on radio and television, including 2020, Oprah, The Today Show, Good Morning America, World News Tonight, Discovery Channel, Animal Planet, and now Voice America, among many others. So welcome to the show, Dr. Dodman.
Thank you very much for having me on, Pam. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm absolutely thrilled that you're here today with us. So why don't we start by actually just talking about the Center for Canine Behavior Studies. Just kind of explain what that is and why it was established.
Well, the Center for Canine Behavior Studies is a website. All those words strung together, Center for Canine Behavior Studies, all strung together, .org, .org. And on that website, we have constructed, let me just step back a pace. The overall goal of the website is to be a sort of the hub of a wheel of a number of different studies that could range from interactions of pets and people through genetic diseases that affect dogs to the welfare of dogs in shelters and how they do when they get out. There's a number of studies that we have in the wings. But there's only one study up now. It's because it's a very recent website. So the inaugural study is to look at the interaction of pets and people personality-wise, behavior-wise, in the case of the dog. But that's what it really is. It's a website which hosts studies that involve dog owners, the public, a special focus on trying to reduce the issue of surrender of animals, dogs to pounds, shelters, where which are pretty much a death sentence to 60% of them. We want to try and reduce that number preferably to zero, but we're struggling in that direction. We want to improve the welfare of dogs in shelters. We want to improve successful adoption out so they don't end up by getting returned. Basically, the mission is to make sure that dogs have a home for life, that people understand them, and that the dog has a good home.
Now, this is the essentially the research division of the Simon Foundation. Can you tell us a little bit about that foundation?
Well, we were fortunate to link up with the Simon Center. is a shelter with a very generous sponsor, Mark Greenberg, who, because of his and his wife's love of animals, they kind of went into the rescue business, not his primary line of work, but he really tried to help. And it got so out of hand over the business, as it were, of rehab. It was so large that he actually went out and built this very large and elegant shelter, one of the largest and most successful in the Northeast, called the Simon Center in Bloomfield, Connecticut. And, you know, he subsidizes that shelter, but his interest is just in the well-being of animals. So the shelter is run through his foundation, the Simon Foundation, which does good works in terms of shelters and adoptions and so on. But also, we linked up with him and his foundation, and he has generously agreed to sub us so we can get this website up and running. And we're working in it together. I mean, without the support of the Simon Foundation, we wouldn't have been able to get as far as we've gone, and we hope to be able to, you know, sort of repay in kind with good results and hopefully some good advice for people who have pets so they don't have to surrender them, and who adopt a pet, and you know, how best to get them adopted successfully.
Now, how many dogs are estimated to be killed in shelters each year? I know you just said that about 60% that go into shelters end up being euthanized. About how many what does that really mean each year?
Well, it's actually pretty large in terms of absolute numbers. The number of dogs surrendered to shelters this year is currently estimated to between 4 and 5 million. I think 4 is the figure I've used in the past, but just this weekend I heard it could be closer to 5. And the number of those dogs that are put down because they can't find a place for them to go is one of the main reasons, is something like 2.2 million. And to put that in perspective, there are something like 9 million new puppies born every year in the United States. So that's close to a quarter of the total number of dogs born every year winds up being killed in a shelter or pound. And that's an annual holocaust. That's a tremendous travesty. And anybody like myself who's a veterinarian or behaviorist of a non-veterinary type or a welfarist or a dog owner, we should all be struggling together very hard to try and make this problem go away. And so that's one of our edicts. I mean, it's just completely out of control. I got to say, cats, too, are surrendered in droves and also meet the similar end. So successful adoption accounts for a percentage, but there's still too large a percentage who don't make it, and after a certain amount of time in a kill shelter will be put to sleep.
Oh, it's just heartbreaking to hear those numbers. So what does the center hope to learn from the results of the study?
Well, bear in mind, first of all, that there will be a number of studies. This center is going to be the host for a series of studies that are all designed to improve, you know, animal welfare, educate pet owners, more successful interaction of pets and people to address the problem on the intake side of the shelter. But this first one, the inaugural study, is really to look at something that myself and co-researcher Dr. James Serpell from the University of Pennsylvania have looked at in a smaller way in the past, in sort of smaller studies, but this is going to be a massive study involving both of us having written a protocol where we will evaluate dog behavior by Dr. Serpell's own tool, the so-called CBARC, the Canine Behavior and Research Questionnaire, which is now being used globally and is a validated tool for assessing dog behavior. And we're going to evaluate we'll find out what the problems are. Maybe a dog is displaying a little excess in terms of owner-directed aggression or fear aggression or separation anxiety. We'll be able to see that from the CBARC on a grand scale across many thousands of dogs. But then we'll have the owners who we're inviting to participate, to enroll in the study, who would fill in some questionnaires for us. Some of them very simple. There's one called the TIPI. 10-item personality inventory, which was developed by a psychologist called Sam Gosling down south somewhere. And this is a validated tool. These simple 10 questions will tell you something about the person. I mean, we don't divulge any personal secrets because this is going to be cranked out with computers and people will be anonymous. But we'll be able to see, for example, would people who have this type of personality tend to wind up with dogs with that type of behavior. We're also using a thing called the Emotional Reactivity Questionnaire, another 10 questions, ERQ, and one or two other questionnaires about how people treat dogs, and something called the Beck Depression Inventory. People don't have to fill in every single form. We definitely would need CBARC and either TIPI or ERQ, but preferably, you know, if they would fill in all of them, it wouldn't take long. All that information goes into a gadget called REDCap, which is a data storage system, and it's stored anonymously at Vanderbilt University and put into a format where it can be analyzed by statisticians to see if there are any real meaningful trends of, say, harsh ownership and aggression of, say, people who are more anxious or fearful having dogs that have the same condition. No, we don't expect at the end of the day that people will change their personality. You can't really do that. But if you understand the impact that you are having on your dog's behavior, you can adjust your behavior towards that dog, because I know that can happen because I'm involved in advising that and successfully accomplishing that for owners of people who have problem dogs. I do that every day. So the more we know, the more we can help, the more we can advise, the more we can make the bond between the person and the dog and the behavior of the dog more acceptable to both, so that surrender is minimized. Because I have to add that a larger number of dogs that are brought to shelters are brought there because of some issue with behavior and improper bonding with the owner.
Right, absolutely. We need to go to break right now, Dr. Dodman. When we come back, I'd like to talk about how the study is funded. So this is Pam Hill. I'm here with the wonderful Dr. Nicholas Dodman, and we'll be right back.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Voice America presents a new kind of health awareness talk show, the Sharon Kleina Hour, Health, Environment, and the Power of Water. Show host Sharon Kleina interviews leading scientists to discover how each of us can become proactive in protecting our personal health environment in an increasingly unhealthy world. Every show offers new information that could save your life. The Sharon Kleina Hour is health from an environmental perspective, your ultimate source for a personal environmental lifestyle. Listen Mondays at 10 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel and Wednesdays at 12 noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Tune in to Patricia Raskin Positive Living on VoiceAmerica.com every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 11 a.m. Pacific Time. This program brings you practical and inspiring principles for living a more authentic, engaging, and passionate life. Patricia's guests will give you a formula for connecting, giving, forgiving, and miraculous living. So tune in and call in to Patricia Raskin Positive Living Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 11 a.m. Pacific Time right here on the Voice America Variety Channel. It's practical, positive solutions for a happy, empowered, and successful life.
News. Opinion.
Your voice counts. Call toll free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Dogs Rock Radio with Pamela Hill. If you have a comment or question, please send us an email to dogsrockradio@gmail.com. That's dogsrockradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. This is Pam Hill. I'm here with Dr. Dodman, and we are talking about this fascinating study that the Center for Behavior for Canine for Behavior Studies is actually going through. So can anyone participate in the study, or are you looking for specific dog owners, for instance, people that have rescued dogs?
No, anyone can participate. I mean, the only enrollment criteria are you have to be a person and you have to have a dog. If you've got meet those two, and you can have two dogs. And the primary caregiver of the dog, you know, the dog owner, if it's a family of two, the one who spends most of the time with the dog, the one who the dog is most likely to learn from, would be the one we would want to enroll. And they simply go to centerforcaninebehaviorstudies.org, and then it's a yellow brick road. They just follow it. They can read on that site a blog that I write, plus interesting articles. It's you know, informational, it's informative, but there is a button there that if you want to enroll in the study, or even just sort of read through what it's about, of course, before you do that, you can click on the button, you can learn a lot more detail than we could go through in the time now. And if they say, yeah, I'd like to do that, it just says, what is your dog's name? How old is your dog? And the study will be activated as soon as we reach a critical number and funding goal. So we've got people in a holding pattern right now. We send them emails to let them know we're always thinking about them. There's about 1,600 people and 2,400 dogs currently enrolled. We want as many as we can get. We want this to be the biggest study ever so we can squeeze out the very best results about interaction of dogs and people and their owners.
Now, what's the minimum number that you're looking for before you can go live, essentially, in terms of participants, and then we'll talk about funding?
Well, we wanted to exceed the numbers that have been reached in previous studies that have sometimes looked at rather sort of narrow focus areas, like a particular breed or something like that. I've done some broader studies, but you know, we did not have enough. We needed to have more dogs to produce clearer and significant results. I think where we're at now is close, but no cigar. I think we need to probably have several thousand. We're at 1,500 plus. The more people, I mean, bottom line is the more people sign up, the better and more robust the results will be. So we'd invite everyone with a half an interest in helping us to learn more about dogs so they can actually help dogs themselves. We'd encourage them to sign up, at least say, I'm ready. It doesn't take long to fill in the details about your dog, and they can sit there waiting for an email which will say, go. And then they can go to these various forms and fill them in as they see fit and finish. And then all that data is stored, like I said, anonymously, and eventually to be cranked statistically to find out what are the correlations. I mean, the emotional reactivity thing is super interesting because if you think about it, some people are really very calm. It's the way they handle themselves. Are their dogs calmer too? Some people are really quite mercurial, and you know, if their dog reacts badly, they will react badly too, and they'll, you know, get red cheeks and stop that. Well, how do these things work? Do they go hand in glove? Are they, you know, could be even opposite? Could be calm owners have noisy dogs, or you know, owners who demonstrate a lot have dogs that are more submissive. These are all the things we want to find out so we can advise people. And in particular, this harsh punishment, which in the past has been quite a lot of strong suggestions that the use of, say, choke and prong, electric shock, alpha rolling the dog at its back and pinning it down, staring at its eyes to act like a dog yourself. We think all these things are counterproductive and actually lead to aggression. We'd like to really nail that down and be able to hang it from the rooftops, because the results of this study are not going to be hidden under a bucket or just published as a scientific article. They will be published, but they will be broadcast from the rooftops around the nation for on national television, in major print outlets, radio shows around the place. These results are going to be everywhere for all people. We're going to get them to trainer groups, erudite veterinary groups, and everyone's going to know this is now the fact, and it will help us in the way forward to adjust the way people interact with their dogs for the better.
Absolutely. Now, how is this funded?
Well, it's sort of one of the ways is sort of crowdfunding. So we do invite people who enroll that, you know, if they happen to feel strongly that we're doing the right thing, they can click a little donate button and give us $10 or $20 to toward the study. That's one way. We're also looking for sponsors, and we have had a very generous sponsor in the form of the pet food company Halo. who gave us a sort of fairly large donation. And we're looking for other donors or groups who want to sponsor, you know, a humane look at animals and try and address this problem of the shelter problem. We might be doing something, well, we are doing something on a fundraising site called Love Animals. I have to make a video in 2 days' time that will be the video to promote in our study on that site. So crowd fundraising, participant fundraising, other sponsors, and we hope to hit our first target and initiate the study fairly soon.
Oh, that's great. This is just going to be good. Like you said, it's going to be good for everybody. So really, everyone listening, please go out and just do what you can. Go to the website, sign your dogs up, and donate. No amount is too small. Every single dime really helps. You've kind of talked around this a couple of times, but tell us what some of the main reasons that so many dogs are returned to shelters, because I know this is one of the main things that you're really trying to kind of figure out so that you can help fix the problem.
Well, yeah, the numbers vary a bit, you know, as to what is considered to be, let's call it recidivism rate or return rate. Dogs that are, you hope, are placed and have a new home for life, and the owner has them ever such a short time and then brings them back. So that was an unsuccessful adoption. And I've heard figures as low as 5%, which is still 5% too many.
Yeah.
I believe the Simon Center itself in Connecticut does very well. I remember a figure quoted as something like 8% return rate. A lot of people will quote numbers higher than that, like even 10 and 15%. And I did read a study from abroad where there was something like 50% return rate. So what's happening if the dogs who are returned is that the dog is not being placed into the right home with the right owner. And we think that our study will help to make sure that that misplacement, as it were, occurs, hopefully not at all, but certainly with less frequency. So Dr. Serpell has recently done a study, which hasn't been published yet. It's en route to publication, where he says that has shown that the CBARC, C-B-A-R-Q, test is effective at judging the temperament of dogs entering shelters. So assume that we know the personality of the dog, we know the areas where he's or she's a little bit extraordinary, you know, whether it's along the lines of separation anxiety or fearfulness or some such. We know that for sure. What we will know after this study is what kind of owner personality, and it may just would be best for that dog. We could have people who want to adopt dogs just sit down in a room, you know, get counseled a little bit about what they want or type of dog. Say, would you mind filling in these 10 or 20 questions, and then we'll find the right dog for you. And maybe that for a dog who has a fearful issue, we need a person who is very positive. Maybe we need a person who is not emotionally reactive. We'll know all that, which will facilitate a much more successful placement of dogs in new homes. This morning, yeah. I had a dog that came to see me, and it was the owners gave up on it when it was 8 months old because they were getting divorced, and neither one wanted to take this miniature schnauzer. And it had been placed with a man, and he had it for like 2 months, and he brought it back. And he said it barked too much or something. I mean, it was placed in the wrong home. I mean, a terrier, typically they do bark a lot, and we would have known that from the CBARC. It wouldn't have been placed with this person who, for reasons of his own personality, had a low bark threshold. And so it was now adopted by the people that I saw this morning who found that it had some fear aggression, but they were willing to stay the course with this dog. But that was just one example, just from this morning's caseload, of an unsuccessful placement of a dog.
Wow, there really is a science to it.
And one of the reasons why the dogs are surrendered is things like, you know, breakups of homes. But you know, it's kind of odd that in the event of a divorce situation, that neither party wanted to take the dog.
Yeah.
And I hope that would
fighting over it.
I hope that divorce thing would never happen to me. But the fact is, in our case, the fight would be about who gets to keep them.
Exactly. Yeah.
That so something was wrong with that relationship in the first place, and that there's another personality of dog and owner mismatch.
Yeah, and it's sad because it makes you wonder if they got the dog to help repair the relationship because, you know, let's face it, dogs have really kind of been elevated to, you know, child status. That's just really, really sad. And the big loser in the end ended up being the, you know, the dog. Now, you guys have actually done some studies on this kind of thing already, right? I know you mentioned, you specifically mentioned that they were a little bit too small, but there have been some studies. You know, what do we know to date about a human's behavior? I know you've kind of, again, mentioned that a few. You just mentioned one, fear aggression, owner-directed aggression. What are those things?
Well, because the studies were small, the results were tantalizing, but not sort of slam dunk. They were more suggestive of the way that things might go. But the first one we did, we used a modification of the Myers-Briggs human personality test that owners volunteered to fill in, and they did. And we assessed the dog's behavior because that's what we do, and we put the two together. And we found some, you know, tantalizing sort of almost results of, you know, perhaps fearful owners having fearful dogs and such like. But it really wasn't the right tool. It turns out that Myers-Briggs is good for some things, but not the perfect tool. So we had a psychologist on the test who was working with us, and he had suggested that we use this test. But the next time he said, you know, because of the difficulties first time around, we're going to use a thing called the California Personality Inventory. Well, I've got to bless the people who filled that in, because that was 400 questions with forced answer, including things like, are you frightened of swimming in deep water? Yes? No. Not sort of, it depends if there are alligators in there or some such.
Exactly.
Yes? No. Yeah. So somehow you come up with your evaluation of the personality, and then we did that with the dog behavior again, and we found this time that it did seem that owners of dogs who had a certain, maybe less forceful personality tended to own dogs who had owner-directed aggression. It turns out that owners of dogs who were somewhat fearful themselves tended to fuel their dog's fear aggression. And it turns out that owners who were, you know, sort of slight trend towards being, you know, more empathetic were not really the best owners for dogs with separation anxiety, because they would sympathize instead of direct. So all these results were tantalizingly close. There were some, you know, borderline significant findings, but it just sort of whetted, those two studies just whetted my mouth. I just wanted to go ahead and learn some more. And in a much larger study, using a better evaluation tool, the CBARC, to look at the dog behavior, and using more customized forms that Dr. Serpell's used before, the TIPI, and a new one, the ERQ, we think we're going to learn things that just have not been learned before, and this will be, we hope, groundbreaking.
Oh, I can't wait to see the results, and I've already signed my dog up, like I said. We need to go to break now, and when we come back, I want to talk about some of the behavioral changes that can occur in dogs throughout the years. So this is Pam Hill. I'm here with Dr. Nicholas Dodman, and we'll be right back.
News. Opinion.
Hear me.
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
Join Dr. Linda Iniguez every week for the Shrink Wrap Forum. This show discusses topics that you wouldn't normally hear in today's media. In the forum, virtually no topic is off-limits. We invite you to join us and participate, or dive into the stream where we value independent thought, talk to those people that are making a difference, and explore ideas considered outside the box. The Shrink Wrap Forum can be heard live every Monday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Tired of lackluster results with your marketing?
Craving more leads in your business? Tune into the Mojo Marketing Edge with the team behind Mojo Global Marketing, Ira Rosen and Corey Michael Sanchez. Winners of the Marketer of the Year, they will show you how to generate daily leads, build databases of raving fans, and close deals faster than ever before. See what's hot right now and how you can tap into it to generate an endless supply of customers and clients. The Mojo Marketing Edge can be heard every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now. 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your questions. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Dogs Rock Radio with Pamela Hill. If you have a comment or question, please send us an email to dogsrockradio@gmail.com. That's dogsrockradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hey, welcome back to the show, everyone. This is Pam Hill. I'm here with Dr. Nicholas Dodman, and I'd like to just talk about some dog behaviors in general. Now, one of the things, again, your website is so good. There's so much great information. I love the blog. And Stanley Coren, who writes for Canine Corner for Psychology Today, actually posted something on your blog about how dogs are increasingly elevated to pet or from pet to family member. We all know that. I just kind of wonder, has that elevation sort of to child status really help the dog, or does it hinder the dog or the humans from a behavioral perspective? Is this really a good thing that we've done that?
Yes, I think so. I think it's helpful for both sides. I mean, for the people, I mean, to have this closeness with another species, and albeit especially with dogs, a non-judgmental one. I mean, whatever you do, I mean, I would say, the only time I ever feel like one of the Beatles is when I come home and my dogs greet me. You're like, way back. It's so
that's
cool.
Perfect,
I mean, I never feel
analogy.
Popular. So the person benefits. I mean, there are health benefits too, increased longevity, lower blood pressure. I mean, just something to care about. You take them walking. It's a healthy thing to do. You meet people. You're more social. Meeting people, being more social, and having exercise, stay off Alzheimer's disease. I mean, for the person to have this close friend is absolutely stunningly wonderful. From the dog's point of view, are you doing it any harm? I don't think so. You know, my two dogs, they actually live the life of Riley, but they're totally respectful. But they sleep on the bed, and they get out for a run in the woods on their own, and then they come back when I whistle, and they have their dinner, and they've got the breakfast, they've got food whenever they want to, they've got water whenever they want to, they can be on the couch, and they're just having a great time. They get long walks, they do doggy things, and follow scents on trails. I mean, if they were just stuck out on a chain in a doghouse, and occasionally put in the barn to catch a couple of rats, I mean, that's a dog's life, hence the saying. You know, it's a dog's life. Well, now they've got a family life, and I think that's wonderful for the dog, and as I said, hugely beneficial for the person.
I think so, too. And one of the things that I just have to wonder, you know, that we've got, you know, we may have 500 friends on Facebook, but the reality is we don't really have that many that are kind of interface anymore. You know, we're doing most of our social networking via social networks, and that connection, I think, has really changed as a result of technology as well, because there's that, you know, really hardly anything better in the world than walking in the door and have your dog go crazy for you and wag its tail and everything else. And I just think we're longing as human beings for that connection as well. And that's something that dogs provide for us.
I think that's exactly right. You know, the Facebook syndrome is you think you've got your 500 friends, but actually, you know, you're not meeting them. You're actually in reality, just look at it, you're just sitting down looking into a screen, pressing buttons.
Exactly. And my
dog
calls me on it.
Having a dog is a real life experience.
Yeah. I mean, I love the fact that he calls me on it. You know, he'll butt my hand with his, you know, with his nose and go, excuse me, I'm right here.
Electrically, you might as well have a gigapet, you know. But
That's funny. Now, I read your absolutely fantastic book, Good Old Dog, and it kind of brought up a couple of behavioral questions I just wanted to ask you. One thing, what are some key indicators if a dog's behavior changes all of a sudden or even over time, that could actually indicate a physical problem with the dog?
Yeah, we see that a lot. So one classical sign would be, for example, you know, owners have had their good old dog, you know, I mean, he was a good young dog when he was young, but now he's hit 10 years old and he's definitely a canine senior citizen. He's in his golden years and everything's fine. And then over a period of a few months, they notice that he's not sleeping well at night. He's very restless. He's wandering from room to room. He might, you know, go into a cupboard or do something unusual, and you're constantly waking up, and your dog really has a sort of a nocturnal sort of issue. And sometimes it's almost like nocturnal separation anxiety, that the dog cannot handle it when he's on his own at night alone and you're just sleeping quietly, effectively removed from him. Very often that condition, I mean, I would say almost always that is a medical problem, whether it's been detected or not, or whether it is subsequently to emerge. The dog knows before you do that he's feeling uncomfortable or is in pain. And oftentimes, as happens with children with cancer, that nighttime is the worst time when you're all alone except for the ticking of a clock. Of course, the other thing that can cause that nighttime anxiety is Alzheimer's, which is another medical condition, really, because that actually is real brain changes that lead to behavioral changes. And yes, dogs do get a sort of sundowner syndrome with Alzheimer's quite often.
Wow. I don't think anybody really realized this. I'm telling you, every listener, if you've got a dog that's older, I have a 7-year-old chocolate lab, and that book was eye-opening to me. That good old dog book was about all, you know, one, you need to take him to the vet probably a little more often. I'm religious about taking him in, but I'm going to start taking him twice a year and everything else. So, I mean, there was just so much great information in there. And you spent quite a bit of time talking in one chapter about how behavioral changes can really be result of a physical problem. So everybody go out and buy that book, because there's just great information in there. And I just relate to that one because my dog is a little bit older. From a behavioral perspective, or even on the person side or on the dog side, is there ever a point where the dog is kind of past the point of no return? Are there behaviors that just really can't be sort of fixed with love and care and conditioning?
Rarely. It is true. And the one that I would mention as the sort of standout condition is, you know, extreme unwarranted aggression, because it's really a public health risk. And it's not just the dog that growls or one who's nipped somebody that can be retrained. Sometimes the aggression is so severe that, you know, if they are dropped off at a shelter or pound, the people who are trying to put in the water bowls, the food, can't even get into the cage to treat them. And they're almost, beyond therapy. I mean, sometimes you can get a dog like that back, but sometimes not. And I've seen dogs in the past where 5 vets have given up on the dog, and they're now sitting with me. And, you know, one I remember was like a 100-something-pound mastiff sitting in the corner. It hated everybody. It bit its owner. It bit people. You know, our very experienced technicians couldn't get anywhere near the dog to take a blood sample. I mean, basically, it was a misanthrope. Hated all people and used very strong language of aggression. And sometimes if there's a physical glitch, like the dog is doing it because of a physical problem that you can address, a hormonal issue or something, but when there's none of that involved and there's nothing you can do, you can try and retrain it, but there's always this danger, especially if they deliver what we call a level 3 or level 4 bite. These are really serious crushing bites, or bites directed towards children, or when dogs are so big that the damage is severe, sometimes there is no return from that.
Now, to what extent do things like exercise training, one-on-one time, you know, play, stem some behavioral problems? Is this just boredom or lack of exercise on behalf of the dog?
Well, that is the yellow brick road of a responsible dog ownership that I wrote about in that book, The Well-Adjusted Dog. Mm-hmm. And chapter 1 was about exercise, and in a line, exercise, I mean cardio type running, not just walking a mile on leash, but running, having fun and jumping around, interacting with other dogs, going to daycare, this kind of workout exercise has a mood stabilizing effect that is more powerful than Prozac. So we say a tired dog is a good dog, or actually maybe not good, but certainly better behaved. And that sometimes the wrong diet can impact a dog. So if you're feeding a very high protein dog to a dog who's already displaying high levels of aggression, that can be a problem. So attention to diet is an issue. Clear communication, which so many people just don't do well, or acting as a good leader, a strong protector of your dog, and so that he follows your lead and you look after him and he doesn't act out. These are all good things, plus an enriched environment indoors and things to do outside that are, I mean, dogs are living creatures. They can't just be dumped in the house while you go to work for 8 hours and left to wander around on your carpets with your computers that are turned off and your TV that's turned off. They need much more attention than that in terms of their environment. If we adjust all these things, we find quite a few problems just sort of gradually slide away.
Yeah, I started taking, again, as a result of reading your books, started taking my dog to daycare once a week, and he really has a, you know, a great time. And the other thing that I've started doing, he's a, you know, a little older, his hips get hurting him a little bit if he's outside running too much and such, is just start doing trick training with him, teaching him how to, you know, find the hot dog hidden in a, you know, down inside a little shell or something like that. And that you know, kind of engagement with him is amazing, how much is kind of reawakening him to life again. It's really something. So it's really,
I think that's exactly right.
Things.
I mean, even something, I mean, training him to find that hot dog or get it out, that's a combination between like nose works, which is training a dog to find something by sense of smell, which is what dogs do best and is an environmental enhancement or lifestyle enhancement. But also there's the food puzzle aspects. If it's, you know, hidden inside a little thing at the end, he has to work to get it out. And, but even things like training a dog, bang, bang, you're dead, and he has to roll over on his back and get a treat. But all of these little tricks, are they increase the closeness of the dog and the owner.
Absolutely. So we've got a few questions from listeners. We've got about 2 minutes before we go to break. The first question is, how do you deal with a dog that's extremely timid? So kind of cowers when people come in the house.
Yeah, you can't force the issue, that's for sure. You have to build that dog's confidence. And I know because, as the old saying used to go, I'm not only the president of the hair club for men, but formerly a sufferer. You know, I have a dog who doesn't do it now, but was very timid when I adopted him from a shelter at 8 months. And every time he saw anyone, including me, he would deferently pee and squat. So-called submissive urination. And it was not needed, you know. He didn't have to display that level of deference. He was trained by avoidance, so when I came in, I wouldn't do what you could normally do to a dog, which is to lean forward, to look at him, to reach out a hand, which could be interpreted by an overly timid dog as a, you know, postural challenge. I would avert my eyes, walk around him, get seated down and greet him in that position, encourage all my family members and friends to do the same. But I would build his confidence by a technique called reverse dominance control, where basically, if you want another name for that program, it's, you know, basically everything in life is free. So he could eat when he wanted to. He could sleep where he wanted to. He could chew what he wanted to. I would play tug of war with him, and he would win. And I built his confidence up, and now he's really fine, proud dog who doesn't need to keep deferring to everybody by doing this submissive urination or any of the other sort of fearful, anxious behaviors he showed. It's confidence building. You can't force it to happen. You just have to create the right conditions for their confidence to build.
Oh, that's great information. So we need to go to break now. When we come back, perhaps you wouldn't mind just answering a couple other questions from listeners. And then we're gonna talk one more time about participating and donating to the study. So this is Pam Hill. I'm here with Dr. Nicholas Dodman, and we'll be right back.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
listen for Matters of Design with celebrity designer Dimitri Christian Skourakis as he explores the dynamics of interior decorating. Imagine your personal style and ideas being shaped by our guest experts as they highlight a mixture of home furnishings, lighting, textiles, and fashion from around the world. If you've ever had difficulty trying to plan how to do it yourself, why not collaborate with a designer and wind up with results like you've never dreamed of? Matters of Design can be heard live every Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Variety.
Each week, Jimmy Gould brings you the stories and the people that you want to hear about. Tune in to A Current Life to hear about the journey to success, how our guests became the people they are today, and the highs and lows they experienced along the way. Each hour will leave you inspired and entertained as Jimmy gets up close and personal with every week's guest and shares ideas you can identify with and apply to your own life. A Current Life with Jimmy Gould airs Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
News. Opinion.
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Dogs Rock Radio with Pamela Hill. If you have a comment or question, please send us an email to dogsrockradio@gmail.com. That's dogsrockradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hey, welcome back to the show, everyone. This is Pam Hill. I'm here with Dr. Nicholas Dodman, and we are talking about a variety of things, primarily around dog behavior. So just one more quick question from a listener. Two dogs in a home, Dr. Dodman, and one passes away. Can you anticipate or would you suspect that the remaining dog, the surviving dog, might have some behavioral changes, and how could you help?
You could anticipate that, because if the two dogs are very close, if they're the best of buddies, like my two, who are, you know, inseparable, it's like Siamese twins, they run around together, look joined at the hip. If you've got that kind of situation, suddenly one drops off the map, the one that's left will become very sad, sort of morose, withdrawn, and actually I'm not frightened to call it, they could become depressed. I mean, it's a well-known syndrome. Their appetite changes. Their playfulness decreases. They could even have sleep issues. I mean, just life becomes gray. I saw a dog just this morning, a big German Shepherd who lost a Labrador mate 2 months ago, and the two of them were joined, very bonded. And the man said that his dog became very sad and wouldn't do anything. And he said only now, which is 2 months later, he's getting back to normal. And the fact is, depression that lasts for a month or so after the bereavement, whether that's loss of a person or a dog friend, is something that is kind of natural, and you do bounce back from it. What we don't recognize in dogs is a sort of trait depression where they constantly go down and constantly go down. The way to fix it really is to try and get them bounce back into life, and sometimes acquisition of a new puppy as a friend to take their mind off the loss.
Okay. Well, that's always good to know. Can dogs get PTSD? I read this from, this again was a thing that you had actually posted on your blog, and I thought this was very interesting.
Yes, they can. And it doesn't have to be going to war, but even the U.S. military now recognize what they call C-PTSD, with a little C in front of it, canine PTSD. And dogs that go into the theater of war that are exposed to some horrible event come back and they're altered. They become hypervigilant. They can't do their work. They won't do things that were even loosely associated with the event, like going into a home where through a doorway, which they'd been trained to do because they went into houses with flashbang grenades and it scared them to death. And, you know, all of the signs of PTSD they show, and they can be rehabbed to some extent. I always think there's a lingering problem, but it can occur following a car accident. It can occur, in one case I saw a dog that was shot by a Boston policeman and recovered, but afterwards could never handle people with police uniforms, police cars, the light on the top of the car that flashes. I mean, all of that caused, and it was constantly hypervigilant, couldn't sleep. I mean, we've seen it since the 1990s. It's only recently become much more widely accepted, but it makes sense because they are, like us, mammals, and following extreme trauma, you can become chronically stressed and it can become an issue.
Well, yeah, and just think about how loud a flashbang grenade is, you know, to them, and because they're, you know, with their hearing and all their senses basically being better than humans, that's really, I can't even imagine. The reason I ask is next week we have the National Police Dog Foundation on the show. Do dogs have a sense of morality?
I don't think they do, not as we might. I mean, they have definitely a sense of self, so-called theory of mind. They understand that they're them, and they understand that other dogs or people are different entities who may have information that they don't have. I believe they can experience jealousy and guilt and even empathy. But morality is a strange thing. I mean, even in humans, morality is different amongst cultures and creeds as to what is an acceptable norm. You know, what might be for one isn't for another, and I don't think I've ever come across it, neither can I rationalize that they might have a moral code. I mean, there are certain things that they would do, like a mum is supposed to look after her pups, mm-hmm. but there are hormonal reasons why she's driven that way.
Sure, absolutely. So I have a dog, I have behavioral problems. Is every vet, is every the average veterinarian trained to assist with if your dog has behavioral problems?
The answer is no. That the number of veterinary schools who have behavior programs has actually decreased over the last couple of years. It was on the increase, and it looked like everyone was going to have a behavior program. But there's only something like 7 schools out of 28 that actually have an in-house program. There's probably another 4 or 5 who actually teach a behavior course. They have someone come in and do it. But at best, only half of the veterinary schools are teaching behavior. And I even had a really stupid student say he didn't attend the behavior lectures last year because he couldn't understand why that was in the syllabus and they should put serious material in rather than animal behavior. And he disliked the behavior course so much that he didn't attend a single lecture.
Oh, I can't even wrap my head around that.
I couldn't wrap my head around it. It was just completely crazy. But, you know, anyway, half of the veterinary schools aren't teaching at all in the syllabus or the curriculum. So that would be along the lines of what this guy thinks about it. But when you consider that behavior, that a behavior that's unacceptable to an owner is responsible for the death of more animals than all infectious diseases put together, kills 3 times as many dogs as cancer. And both those other subjects are important, infectious disease and cancer. Behavior is more important if you're interested in the dogs staying alive and living a long and happy life, which as a veterinarian, I think you should be. And as a dog owner, you would hope for your pet.
Absolutely. Just quickly, what qualifications that somebody should look for? So I decided that I want to get help for a behavioral problem. What qualifications should I be looking for in a veterinarian?
Well, for a veterinarian, it would certainly help if they'd been to one of the schools that has a behavior program. So they've had an opportunity for, they've had a lecture course, they've had an opportunity for clinical rotations and selectives, and generally they've lived in an environment where it's been, you know, paid some attention. That would be helpful. You know, where did you go to veterinary school? I went to X. Oh, do they have a program there? No. Because then what you have basically is the vet would just have a sort of trainer level knowledge. And when I say trainer, I don't mean that in a derogatory way, because there are some highly qualified trainers, those with qualifications like CPDT. I mean, it's a tough exam for trainers who belong to the Association of Pet Dog Trainers. And there are other, you know, equally impressive trainer qualifications. But there are a lot of trainers out there who, like these vets, have really no training. And, you know, maybe they were working on the line one day and they find they're good at doing something with their dog, and so the next day they're in the yellow pages and put themselves down a trainer. But there are, for veterinarians, it helps if they have been to a school that teaches behavior. It helps if they have an interest in behavior. It helps if they know the programs. Helps if they have some familiarity with some of the medical approaches to dealing with some of the more serious issues like separation anxiety. It's just a question of asking questions of your vet to find out what is their experience.
Absolutely. And and you've done such a great job on this show, I think, of showing how critically important that behavioral thing is. It's really the crux of why these dogs are being put into to shelters and abandoned. So can you just remind us one more time about how people can donate or participate in the study?
Well, people may just find this website interesting, period. It's just called Center for Canine Behavior Studies, all one word. Center for Canine Behavior Studies .org on the web, and they can look at, you know, nice pictures, read good articles, read a blog, learn about the study. I mean, it's just a fun place to visit. But if they, having read the description of the study and what we're trying to achieve, they want to enroll, all they have to do is click the enroll button and just follow the instructions, and that will register their dog. Whereupon they're on our email list. From time to time, we'll tell them where we're at, what is the state of play, hopefully soon to initiate the first round of that study and say,
right,
basically press the go button. So,
and donating really, is, I'm sorry, Dr. Dodd, we're completely out of time, but donating is the same thing. Go to that website, and no, there's no amount of donation that is too small. I really apologize that I had to cut you off there,
no,
but I wanted
fine.
To make sure to get that in. So listen in next week when we have the National Police Dog Foundation talking about the amazing work they're doing supporting the nation's current and retired police dogs. Until then, remember, life is so short, so wag more, bark less, and hug your dog as often as you can. Safe travels, everyone.
That's all we can cover for this week's show. Please be sure to join Pamela Hill for another edition of Dogs Rock Radio next Monday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Now, get outside and enjoy the fresh air with your best friend.